Welcome to What the Papers Said with me, Brian Cathcart. It was the week when the whole country was so desperate for news of the war against Napoleon that we all went a little crazy. And then, when that news finally arrived, we were so relieved and delighted that we went crazy all over again. It's hard to believe it now, but when we got up last Monday morning, we didn't even know the war had broken out. But then came this report from Belgium in the London Evening Courier.
Brussels, June 16 hostilities began yesterday. The French began first. They entered Charleroi, a little frontier town. The brave Lord Wellington set off this morning at 7 o'clock. All the troops have passed through Brussels. They all advance, and we have good hopes all will be well.
Another evening paper, The Sun, struck a fighting pose in its editorial.
The two armies are front to front. If Bonaparte can bring only 120,000 fighting men into the field, and we very much doubt if he can do more, we may hope for a speedy termination of the contest and of the tyrant's cause.
Enthusiasm for war, however, was not universal. The Morning Chronicle, an opposition paper, greeted the news in a mood of resignation.
We have done our utmost in deprecating the crusade against the French and in endeavouring to avert from our country the fatal consequences of an attack on our whole people merely because they preferred one chief magistrate over another. But as our efforts have failed and the armies have actually engaged, we must hope for the success of our gallant countrymen.
On Tuesday morning, it was the war party that woke up to welcome news. The Morning Chronicle would report...
The town was put into the highest state of exultation by an account published in a second edition of the Morning Post announcing the commencement of hostilities with the most glorious éclat to the Allies and particularly to the British.
The cause of the excitement? A report picked up in Ostend by an Essex shipowner called Daniel Sutton, which said that Wellington had defeated Napoleon and sent his army fleeing back over the French border. Sadly for the Post, when real news reached town, it told a different story. The Morning Chronicle spoke to two MPs just back from Brussels who poo-pooed Sutton's tale of victory.
From these gentlemen, we learned that reports given to the public yesterday were greatly exaggerated and that the encounter between the two armies terminated without advantage to either side.
The Chronicle was able to add an update, mentioning an obscure Belgian village that would soon become famous.
The Duke of Wellington and Blücher are exerting themselves to concentrate their force and have retreated and taken up a position at Waterloo.
It was now Tuesday evening, and the public was desperate to know what had really happened in Belgium. The Herald described the scenes on the streets of London.
The evening having been fine, and the papers having been profuse of various, if not contradictory, intelligence, groups of people remained to a late hour on the Strand, some arguing for one, some for another construction of the news from Flanders. About the Horse Guards, the crowd was greater, and St James's Park was thronged all the evening with people waiting for the dispatches.
All eyes were trained on the road from the Kent coast, from where Wellington's message must come. Wednesday morning came, and still there was no official word. By nightfall, anxiety had turned into something like hysteria, but at long last, relief was at hand. Just after 11 p.m, a carriage swept across Westminster Bridge and into the midst of an almost hysterical throng, bearing Major the Honourable Henry Percy with the Duke's official dispatch. The news was almost too good to believe. The Morning Post stacked headline upon headline.
Great and glorious news! Annihilation of Bonaparte's whole army and his narrow personal escape. Capture of the traitor's personal staff and carriage and 210 pieces of cannon.
An editorial declared...
What renders this great and splendid achievement the more gratifying to us is the proud circumstance of its having been accomplished chiefly by British valour. Britain, therefore, may now be truly considered as at the summit of glory.
2 days of street parties followed. The St James's Chronicle described the scenes.
The streets were thronged with people beyond conception. The whole was one moving crowd, carriages going slowly and forcing their way through the populace. The fair sex were equally numerous as the male. Bands of music paraded the streets until 2 o'clock. Dustmen with their bells kept up a perpetual din.
And then a timeless note.
The pickpockets were very busy.
But not everyone was pleased by the turn of events. The most popular journalist in Britain, William Cobbett, wrote in his paper, The Weekly Register,
"While this delirium continues at its height, it would be useless in me to try to bring the public back to reason. I might as well expect that a drunken man will discuss, with calmness and perspicacity, an argument in mathematics or moral philosophy."
"Wellington's war," declared Cobbett,
"has been fought for the purpose of determining whether France is or is not to be permitted to exercise the right of choosing her own government."
Cobbett was right, of course, when he said there was little point in arguing with Waterloo delirium. What he can't have guessed, however, is how long that effect would last.